The United Nations urges the United States to reverse its decision on designating Yemen's Ansarullah movement as a foreign terrorist group. China slams the U.S. for holding talks with the Taiwanese president, and this while the tensions remain high between the two economic powers. The number of confirmed coronavirus cases in the U.S. exceed 23,384,000 Americans have died of the disease. Greetings and a warm welcome to World News. Good to have you with us. The United Nations has strongly condemned a U.S. decision to designate the Yemeni Ansarullah movement as a foreign terrorist organization. UN Food Chief David Beasley says that a U.S. move is a literal death sentence to hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Yemenis. Beasley slammed the decision as catastrophic. The World Body's Yemen envoy, Martin Griffith, also said that a designation will have a chilling effect on the peace process in war-torn Yemen. UNH Chief Mark Lowcock also urged Washington to reverse course, warning that a U.S. move will bring about a famine that's unprecedented in nearly four decades. On Sunday, Washington blacklisted the Ansarullah movement, which controls northern Yemen. The move, which takes effect on January 19th, has drawn criticism from the international community, including from the European Union. Starting with China slamming the U.S. for holding talks with a Taiwanese president as tensions remain high between the two economic powers.
The Chinese side firmly opposes any form of official exchanges between the U.S. and Taiwan. The words and deeds of Kellycraft seriously interfere with China's internal affairs, gravely violate the One China principle and the provisions of the three China-U.S. joint communiques, and gravely violate the U.S. political commitment on the Taiwan question. China is firmly opposed to that.
Now, Beijing called on Washington to abide by the One China policy and stop interfering in its internal affairs. China says it will continue to take all necessary measures to resolutely safeguard its sovereignty and security interests. It also warned that some U.S. politicians will inevitably pay a heavy price for their wrong statements and actions. And this after the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. held a phone call with Taiwanese president after her visit to the territory was canceled on Tuesday. China views the island as part of its territory and is strongly opposed to increased U.S. support for it. Now, let me invite a couple of guests to this news review show and see what they think about this and discuss that a little bit. So we'll have Michael Billington with the Asia Desk, executive of the Intelligence Review from Leesburg, and also James Tweedy, journalist and commentator, is joining me from Plymouth. Welcome both to the show. Let's go to Michael. Should the Chinese take it so seriously as it looks like they have? You know, they had this strong-worded comments out, you know, given the fact that it's the final week of the Trump administration at the White House.
Yes, they should take it seriously. You have a situation in where Pompeo, who should have been fired along with John Bolton, this was the biggest mistake Donald Trump made in his administration, has effectively done, as in the words of a Global Times editorial the other day, he's leaving a scorched earth policy. He's setting mines everywhere. He's trying to undermine any potential for resolving various world crises. What you had in your last section from David Beasley, the head of the World Food Program, who said that Pompeo's sentence on the Houthis being terrorists was a little death sentence. It's not so little. And if the provocation with China were to, by accident or by intent, to turn into a military confrontation between two nuclear powers, this would not be a little death sentence. This would be a massive death sentence. We are calling on Donald Trump to throw over the chessboard in his last days as president and to call Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin and to go back to his initial policy of being friends with Russia and friends with China as probably the only certain way to prevent the descent of the Western world into a new kind of fascism, a green fascism, where the central banks, in the midst of this massive economic and financial breakdown crisis taking place in the total West, where they are planning to implement this so-called green finance, where they will cut off credit to development around the world, cut off under the guise of stopping carbon, of stopping a carbon footprint. This is actual fascist economics, and it's very close to being implemented. We don't expect anything other than that under the new Biden administration, and therefore Trump, if he had the courage and the backing, could throw over the chessboard, as I said, and get in touch with Xi Jinping, stop these crazy provocations around Taiwan and around the South China Sea, get in touch with Vladimir Putin, stop the NATO push up to Russia's border. These are things that Trump campaigned on. Mm-hmm. And during the first 2-3 years, this was his program. And he's been boxed into this crazy McCarthyite anti-China hysteria by lunatics like Pompeo. So this is a moment of great crisis for civilization.
Now, from Plymouth, let me bring in James Twitty. James, given what's happened in the past 4 years with Mr. Trump at the Oval Office and what he has done regarding his country's relations with China, no matter if it was his incentive or, as Michael put it, people like Pompeo pushing him into that direction. Now, what is left of this Sino-America ties, and what's Joe Biden going to do with that?
Well, I mean, Biden's already said that he's going to reverse this decision, and that may be in the next week, as you suggested. The underlying causes of this are, I mean, they're not going to go away, but, I mean, you have, let's say, capital in the U.S. is divided between those who are happy that China is able to outcompete the USA on its own terms, on its own capitalist terms, and they're fine with that as long as they can offshore production to China, in other words, China, and those who want to kind of cut China off altogether and have, you know, have a trade war, let's say, as Donald Trump did, impose all sorts of tariffs, maybe even find some pretext to block trade entirely. But okay, I mean, what Trump has done generally since he came into power, when he came into office, shortly afterwards, the current Taiwanese president was elected, Tsai Ing-wen. And Trump called her directly and congratulated her, which was a kind of a breach of protocol with China. Okay, so the USA has this policy, has had since the end of the Second World War, a policy of only recognizing one state in China, and from 1949 to 1979, that was Taiwan, and that's the People's Republic of China. Okay, but since 1979, the U.S. has always played this game where it doesn't officially recognize Taiwan, but it sells arms to the Taiwanese government. So, you know, they've never really been playing fair by this. And what Trump did was essentially put the cards on the table that the U.S. does not really respect its agreements with Beijing about Taiwan. Okay. Things will go back. Okay. What Mike Pompeo has been doing in recent days, I'm looking at it as a kind of setting a series of challenges to Joe Biden when he comes into power. Is he going to, for instance, on Monday, the State Department declared Cuba to be a state sponsor of terrorism again. It was taken off that list in 2015 by the Obama administration. Will Biden take it off again? Is he going to risk alienating all those Cuban-American votes in Florida? Maybe not, you know. So it remains to be seen. I don't think Biden is any less, belligerent towards China than Trump, mm-hmm. particularly. He's promising a return to the Obama administration. And what did Obama do? He sent the the Navy and the Air Force, and it's the Navy's Air Force, to invade China's territorial waters and airspace in the South China Sea, to confront it over territorial disputes which China has with other nations, not with the US. So it's, the methods will change, but the goals of, the general poor relations with China will continue in some form or another.
Okay, thank you very much for your comments and contribution. Let me thank our guests. We had Mike Billington, Asia Desk of the Executive Intelligence Review from Leesburg, James Tweedy, journalist and commentator from Plymouth, with their comments and contribution. Moving on, authorities in the U.S. are beefing up security in the capital, Washington, D.C., ahead of the January 20th inauguration of the president-elect. 20,000 National Guards will remain on high alert in the study, the Pentagon announcing these forces are also authorized to carry weapons and make arrests, citing public safety as their priority. A number of public areas and monuments will also be closed until after the inauguration. Security measures come amid fears of violent protests during the ceremony. Last week, the Congress building was breached by supporters of President Trump. Five people got killed. House of Representatives already impeached Trump over charges of inciting insurrection on the Capitol.
In a vote which fell almost totally along party lines, Donald Trump has become the first United States president to be impeached twice. Before Bill Clinton in 1998, there was only one other impeachment ever, reflecting how highly polarized the nation has become. The impeachment appears totally symbolic. A trial in the Senate and a two-thirds vote in favor is needed to actually convict and expel Trump. The Senate will not meet until January 19th, and Joe Biden will be inaugurated as president on January 20th.
Trump will be out of the office in 7 days. I mean, I think that I understand and I'm sympathetic to people who want him out earlier, but I just don't think that it's the a priority of anybody who wants to make sure that this doesn't continue. And the goal should be to cut across the sympathies for these right-wing actions.
Just 1 week earlier, the entire world was shocked after a protest burst into the Capitol building, the home of America's parliament, stopping the counting of the Electoral College's disputed presidential votes. Anger, accusations, despair, and emotional outbursts immediately swept the nation and may not lessen even after impeachment. Some top media have compared the events, which occurred on the date 1-6, to 9-11. The Democrat-dominated House of Representatives successfully charged Trump with incitement to insurrection so quickly that many wonder if they have set a dangerous precedent of a so-called snap impeachment. Worries are widespread that the only practical result of the historic impeachment is even more division in a nation already racked by the coronavirus, racial strife, police brutality, years of tremendous cultural disunity, and economic catastrophe.
I think that impeachment is it's a good side dish, but it should not be the focus of anybody who considers themselves to be on the left. I understand why the center might do that, why neoliberals might do it, but Keynesian, if you will, actions such as the $2,000, universal health care, that these things need to be put forth to undermine the growth of the right, the growing right, which I don't think impeachment is going to address.
The controversial decision of the House of Representatives came after the FBI warned that armed anti-inauguration protests are expected across all 50 state capitals starting on January 16th and ending on Inauguration Day at the earliest. The United States will remain in a historic state of tension and animosity until then, and maybe even long after. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Author and commentator John Stepling says that the recent chaos in the U.S. has pushed the country on the verge of a police state.
But it's a dangerous moment because we're seeing a huge number of people in the liberal press, the sort of pseudo-left press, cheerleading what are really repressive policies and dangerous anti-democratic policies. The lockdown themselves are anti-democratic. There's been no debate, no referendum, nothing of that sort in regard to this at all. So we're seeing increasingly a government by decree and a populace, divided populace indeed, but certainly a huge number of people asking for very repressive legislation. And we're seeing a press, a media, that is extraordinarily biased.
The U.S. Labor Department saying that the number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment benefits has jumped to 965,000, and that only in the first week of 2021. The department says the figure shows a rise of 181,000 compared with the previous week. That's the biggest increase since the pandemic began last March. The data is far worse than what analysts had expected. And that is the world's largest economy continues to reel from a recent spike in coronavirus infections. The number of confirmed COVID-19 cases in the States has exceeded 23 million, with over 384,000 deaths. The U.S. has already started its vaccination campaign. The coronavirus crisis has taken a heavy toll on the German economy. The official data showing the country last year suffered its biggest contraction in more than a decade. According to the Federal Statistics Agency, the German economic output shrank 5%. Its exports plunged by 10%. The figure has been the highest since the 2009 financial crisis. The economy also likely stagnated in the fourth quarter. Germany's economy has been hit hard since the pandemic began last year. The government says that the outbreak has hit hard all the economic sectors. Let's take a glance at the UK. A new report shows that in that country, 4.5 million people were waiting to start non-urgent hospital treatment at the end of November 2020. According to a report by the National Health System, the figure is the highest since records began. The report highlights the pressures on UK hospitals because of the COVID-19 crisis. Experts say the situation will remain tough until the virus is restrained. Last week, England entered its third and more restrictive national lockdown, and that after officials warned that a country's health system might become overwhelmed with a steep rise in cases. The UK is grappling with a new highly transmissible variant of COVID-19. Well, that's it with the COVID news. Now, in other news, the Turkish defense minister says that Ankara won't turn back on its deal for Russian S-400 missile system, despite the opposition from the U.S. Hulusi Akar says that annulling the contract would be, quote, very problematic. However, he expressed hope that a dispute with the United States on the issue could be resolved through dialogue. The official urged Washington to distance itself from threatening language such as sanctions. Washington slapped sanctions on Turkey last month following its acquisition of the S-400 system. The U.S. says that the Russian missile systems pose a threat to its F-35 fighter jets and also to NATO's broader defense systems. Turkey rejects the allegations and says that the S-400 system will not be integrated into NATO. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
There are no charges pending against Julian Assange in the UK. A UK judge denied the US request to extradite him, the only place where charges are pending. Despite this, the judge just ruled he must remain imprisoned in a COVID-ridden high-security prison while the US appeals, said Glenn Greenwald, journalist. Dear listeners, please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Alan McLeod Ryder. This article is published under the heading Journalist and Activist Condemned UK Decision to Keep Assange Locked Up Without Charge. Here's the details of this article. United Kingdom Court has ruled that WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange must remain in prison, despite an earlier ruling that he could not be extradited to the United States. Explaining her decision, District Judge Vanessa Baretzer said that, as far as Mr. Assange is concerned, this case has not been won, adding that the United States must be allowed to appeal her earlier decision. Part of the ruling was based upon her assessment of the Australian publisher being a serious flight risk if released, noting he had huge support networks that could help him should he again choose to go to the ground. The court's decision was immediately panned by journalists and press freedom organizations who had hoped to see Assange released recently after 7 years in prison and hiding in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. To us, that is nothing more than a pretext to keep him detained. This seems unnecessarily punitive at adding insult to injury after the 10 years of hell that he has endured. We are deeply disappointed with today's decision, said Rebecca Vincent, Reporters Without Borders Director of International Campaigns, outside the courtroom. Vincent had been denied entry to the courtroom, as had some of Assange's relatives. She had also faced questioning and harassment from police, who used their new powers under the UK's lockdown law to break up pro-Assange demonstrations, even arresting a 92-year-old man. Assange lawyer Edward Fitzgerald QC expressed his disappointment at the news that his client would be heading back to Belmarsh Prison in South London. The logical outcome of the ruling would be he gains liberty at least conditionally, he stated. Assange colleagues in alternative media were also quick to condemn Baretzer's ruling. The judge's decision against bailing Assange only fuels the theory that this prosecution is about keeping a publisher who the US government despises tied up and in limbo so he cannot effectively challenge them ever again, said Kevin Castola. This is absolutely outrageous for the judge to deny Assange bail and to claim that Belmarsh is doing a fine job of handling COVID, even while London is on lockdown. There are no charges pending against Julian Assange in the UK. A UK judge denied the US request to extradite him, the only place where charges are pending. Despite this, the judge just ruled he must remain imprisoned in a COVID-ridden high-security prison while the US appeals, added Glenn Greenwald, journalist. This shows how authoritarian the British judiciary is. The only thing the US cares about is keeping Assange in a cage, silenced and disappeared. This gives them the best of all worlds. He stays in prison with no need to prove he's guilty of anything. That's despotic. Particularly high-security prison, HMP Belmarsh, is generally considered the UK's most notorious jail, taking in prisoners from around the country that other prisons cannot handle. The government's 2019 report on conditions inside the facility noted it was overrun with 120 violent gangs, and that there were 161 recorded inmate assaults on staff. After a COVID-19 outbreak this year, inmates have been largely locked down in their cells, typically for 23 hours a day. Barrister ruled that Assange would not be sent to the United States as she was not convinced that the U.S. prison system could guarantee he would not commit suicide while incarcerated. The publisher faced up to 175 years in prison for his alleged breach of Espionage Act of 1917. While receiving classified information from U.S. soldier Chelsea Manning. However, she sided with the United States on both their assertions and the legality of their claims, setting a precedent that some called a chilling ruling for investigative journalism. WikiLeaks disseminated Manning's information, which came to be known as the Iraq War Logs. Perhaps the most explosive revelation was a recording of a U.S. helicopter attack on central Baghdad in July 2007. The video shows American personnel massacring at least a dozen Iraqi civilians, including two Reuters journalists, in cold blood. The images went viral on social media and showed a completely different sight to the occupation than the carefully sanitized one the U.S. military had been fastidiously curating. From 2013 to 2019, Assange was confined to the Ecuadorian embassy in London, unable to travel to the country that had offered him political asylum. However, keen to curry favor with Washington, new President Lenin Moreno allowed British authorities to enter the building and arrest him. Since then, he has been housed in Belmarsh. This new ruling prolongs his stay. But if the appeal is unsuccessful, the UK will no longer have any legal argument to keep him interned. Perhaps there is light at the end of the tunnel for the Australian.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
The first type of right that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam speaks about in his treatise is the right of God, the right of Allah, Haqqullah.
For humanity, a commentary on Risalatul Huquq of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. By Hujjatul Islam, Zayd As-Salam.
Allah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-Tahirin. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome to IRIB English Radio and another program for humanity, where we are discussing the treaties of rights of Imam Ali al-Sajjad Zain al-Abidin, peace be upon him. And we're continuing on with speaking about the rights of the associate. When Imam al-Sajjad, peace be upon him, used the word al-Khaliq, it is a broader meaning than al-Sadiq or al-Akh, or it is more broader than the meaning of a friend or an associate or a neighbor, and it could mean something like a fellow passenger in a train or a plane or in a taxi. It could mean a classmate. They're not your associate, they're not your colleague, they're not your friend, they're not your neighbor, they're just there standing in line waiting for a bread. Whatever it may be, it's just someone that you are going to be mixing with. How do you need to conduct yourself with them? And that's, I think, very important for us to remember, because when we say that there are rights with observing certain things in the general public, then of course that's going to make sure that I am more polite, more cautious of what I do, and of course, most importantly, more courteous. I need to be courteous. And this comes in the sense that when I see it to be in this particular line, then it's going to bring about a lot of good things for me. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad, ya Rabbi salli alayhi wa ali. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad, ya Rabbi salli alayhi wa ali. Now, Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him, uses very different kind of explanations in the words that he uses, where he says that you shouldn't be someone who is deceiving, you shouldn't be someone who is doing this, you shouldn't be someone who is doing that. And these are the rights of the Khalil. Why is that? Because even though you might have a very quick encounter with this particular individual, but there are responsibilities that are going to be entailed with it. We're just going to go for a short break and we will be back very, very soon.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners, and we're talking about the word that Imam al-Sajjad uses of al-Khaliq. And in our understanding, when we come to realize this particular word, we can see that al-Khaliq is a wider scope of an associate or a friend. And it pretty much means anyone that you are mixing with. You might be able to choose who you associate with, but when we are in other kind of circumstances, we have less, of course, choices. And so in this general public, I need to make sure that I'm conducting myself in the best way possible. And I need to observe the best things that are going to be good for my benefit and also for those who are around me. Imam al-Sajjad, peace be upon him, he says, أَوَأَمَّا حَقُّ الْخَلِيطِ فَأَنْ لَا تَغُرَّهُ وَلَا تَغُشَّهُ. Don't mislead that person. Don't trick that person. Don't cheat that person. Don't lie to that person. And the rest of the words that we have previously explained. So don't deceive and don't trick. You know, what Imam As-Sajjad, peace be upon him, here is trying to say is that lying is a type of deception, and it's you distracting them away from the right path, or you probably bringing them harm as well. And why would someone want to do that? You don't want to bring loss to other people. You don't want to harm other people. You don't want to affect other people in a bad, negative way. You represent something and you want to make sure that you show your real face. And naturally, of course, you don't want to fall into any kind of deviation, or you don't want to wrong somebody in any way.
Allahumma salli wa sallim ala rasooli wa alin nabiyyil azim. Allahumma salli wa sallim ala rasooli wa alin nabiyyil azim. Allahumma salli wa sallim ala rasooli wa alin nabiyyil azim. Allahumma salli wa sallim ala rasooli wa alin nabiyyil azim.
If you were to be different to the reality of who you are, that makes you a person who is two-faced, or what would we call a hypocrite, a munafiq. And that's why we need to stay away from hypocrisy, because deception is a kind of hypocrisy. It's a type of hypocrisy. If you say the opposite to the truth and you intend to deceive it by, of course, then that means that you're not showing your real face. You're not showing who you really are to the people. And that's the worst trait that any individual can have. Because imagine how the society will become. The society will become very, very plagued and dangerous with so many spiritual and moral sicknesses if people have two personalities. And that's why, in reality, you are not tricking anybody other than yourself. We need to realize that when Imam As-Sajjad, peace be upon him, says, and that you shouldn't be tricking them, deceiving them, it means don't have two faces. We're going to continue on speaking about this avoiding of deception in our next episode. Until then, please visit us on www.parstoday.com or email us through englishradio@irib.ir. Until our next program, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Salli ya Rabbi ala Taha al-Amin, rahmatin arsaltahu lil alamin, wa ala alin nabiyyi ajma'in, fabihim narjuka ahsin khatmina.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
An unrepentant Donald Trump on Tuesday, 12th of January, denied inciting an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to shift blame that Democrats rejected as despicable as a number of senior Republicans began publicly turning against their president. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist David Smith, Joanne Grieve, Tom McCarthy, and Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled, Growing Cohort of Republicans Turn Against Trump as He Denies Inciting Capitol Attack. An unrepentant President Donald Trump on Tuesday, 12th of January, denied inciting an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to shift the blame that Democrats rejected as despicable, as a number of senior Republicans began publicly turning against their own president. The president spoke to reporters on the South Lawn of the White House for the first time since a pro-Trump mob rampaged through the Capitol last week, leaving five people dead. Democrats accuse him of stoking violence, and a vote to impeach him went ahead on Wednesday. So if you read my speech, people thought that what I said was totally appropriate, Donald Trump insisted as he headed to Texas to tour parts of the barrier he ordered constructed on the U.S.-Mexico border as part of his hardline immigration policies. The president then sought to draw a false equivalence with last summer's mostly peaceful protests against racial injustice in America. He said, if you look at what other people have said, politicians at a high level, about the riots during the summer, the horrible riots in Portland and Seattle, in various other places, that was a real problem, what they said. Last Wednesday, 6th of January, Donald Trump gave an incendiary speech to a raucous crowd near the White House, insisting his election defeat by Joe Biden could be overturned, and urging the crowd to march to the Capitol and fight much harder against bad people. He said, you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength. Democrats have directly linked the speech and previous Donald Trump comments to the carnage that unfolded when rioters, some carrying Confederate flags, fought with police and looted congressional offices on Wednesday, 6th of January. House Democrats have led demands for Donald Trump to be removed or face a historic second impeachment. Meanwhile, a handful of senior Republicans in recent days have joined calls for Donald Trump to go. And crucially, the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, indicated to associates that he believes Donald Trump deserves to be impeached, according to a report by the New York Times on Tuesday. With Mitch McConnell thinking it will make it easier for the party to purge him as a liability. The New York Times further reported that the House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy has toyed variously with asking Trump to resign, supporting impeachment, and considering a vote to censure the president. And the senior House Republican Liz Cheney said she would vote to impeach Donald Trump. The president of the United States summoned this mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame of this attack. Everything that follows was his doing. None of this would have happened without the president, Liz Cheney insisted. I will vote to impeach the president. As he left the White House on Tuesday, 12th of January, Donald Trump said, the impeachment is really a continuation of the greatest witch hunt in the history of politics. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. This impeachment is causing tremendous anger, and it's really a terrible thing that they're doing. Democrats gave short shrift to Donald Trump's denial of responsibility, Speaking to reporters in New York, Chuck Schumer, the Senate minority leader, said, "What Trump did today, blaming others for what he caused, is a pathological technique used by the worst of dictators. Trump causes the anger, he causes the divisiveness, he foments the violence and blames others for it. That is despicable. The technique Trump is used by the worst dictators the globe has ever seen. Donald Trump should not hold office one day longer, and what we saw in his statements today is proof positive of that," Chuck Schumer said. Federal investigators are warning of additional potential security threats around the inauguration of Joe Biden next week. NBC News reported that extremists are using Telegram, an encrypted communication app, to urge violence and even share knowledge of how to make guns and bombs. Multiple media outlets also confirmed an ABC News report that the FBI expect armed pro-Trump protesters in all 50 state capitals and Washington before Inauguration Day. Trump's potential to fuel further unrest is a source of anxiety. Behind the scenes, Donald Trump has reportedly continued his retreat into paranoia and unreality, repeating in a conversation with the House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy the lie that so-called Antifa left-wing activists, not his supporters, were responsible for death and destruction inside the Capitol building. "It's not Antifa," Kevin McCarthy reportedly replied. "It's MAGA. I know, I was there." MAGA refers to the Trump slogan, "Make America Great Again." The House voted on Tuesday night, 12th of January, on a resolution seeking the use of the 25th Amendment, which provides for the removal of a president deemed unfit for office, although it has never been used. Dependent on the Vice President Mike Pence, the gambit failed because of Pence's refusal to cooperate. After days of silence between the pair, Donald Trump and Mike Pence held a good conversation at the White House on Monday, 11th of January. The conversation on Monday evening was, according to an unnamed official, telling the Reuters news agency. Some who responded to Donald Trump's call to storm the Capitol building, prompting clashes in which a police officer was killed, a rioter was shot dead, and three others died, were caught on video chanting, "Hang Mike Pence," after he withstood demands for the president that he engineer overturning the election result, which is not in his power. A House of Representatives vote to impeach Donald Trump on one article for incitement of insurrection occurred on Wednesday. The timetable for an ensuing Senate trial is uncertain. Unlike Trump's first impeachment in December of 2019, a sizable number of Republicans in the House and a handful of Senate Republicans have signaled support for impeachment. Those lawmakers included Liz Cheney, the third-ranking House Republican. Republicans expect up to 20 GOP lawmakers to vote for impeachment, according to a report by Punchbowl. Meanwhile, Ted Lieu, a Democratic congressman, told MSNBC Network, "We don't actually need a lot of evidence here because it's all out in the open. There is no dispute that Donald Trump gave a speech. There is no dispute there was an attack on the Capitol building. And there is no dispute that multiple people died." Last week's huge security failure is under growing scrutiny. The Washington Post said it had obtained an internal FBI document from the day before the attack, warning extremists were preparing to commit violence and war. The report undermined previous claims that the FBI had no intelligence about an imminent attack. The FBI and the Department of Justice on Tuesday held the first press conference by any part of the U.S. federal government since the Capitol attack. Michael Shervin, federal prosecutor for the District of Columbia, indicated that many amid the hundreds of pro-Trump rioters who violently invaded the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday, 6th of January, are suspected in a mind-blowing range of crimes, including felony, murder and sedition and conspiracy. Neither the Department of Justice nor the FBI has explained how the security failures came about at the Capitol building, but Michael Sherwin said rioters were being pursued across the country. The range of criminal conduct was unmatched, Sherwin said, and warned lawbreakers, you will be charged and you will be found. The former federal cybersecurity chief Chris Krebs, who Donald Trump fired for saying the election was secure, told CNN, this is the equivalent of ignoring the pain in your chest for a couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden you have a catastrophic heart attack. We are on the verge of what I fear to be a pretty significant breakdown in democracy and civil society in the United States.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kHz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech from IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Sayyid Mohsen Kharrazi. Please stay tuned.
ببینی پیش خدا چه موقعیتی داری به حرف این اون گوش نکن مردم.
If we want to find our true position in the eyes of Allah, we must only consider Him in our actions and do not be very much happy with the sayings and admirations of others. The titles and respect given by people to each has no value in comparison to the honor and glory that Allah gives. These are all temporary credits which are not necessarily in harmony with realities. Now, the search for truth is very important. If we search for truth inside our heart and find the real position of Allah in it, then we can claim to be the real man of action and the true lover of Allah. The true lover of Allah is not merely happy with the claps and cheers of this and that. People themselves are better aware of their hearts and their wrongdoings. They know that Allah does not disclose their secrets to others. This is why we as Muslims must look again in our hearts and find the true place of Allah in it. If we do this, we can find whether we are with Allah or without Him in our lives. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Khalaf Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Sayyid Mohsen Kharrazi. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en Khalaf Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.